This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Got two segments today. First one's going to be on recruiting with Wayne McGahee III from NoleDigest.com. Going to look at the Florida State's defensive back recruiting and the possibility that they may land the top two cornerback prospects in the class of 2016, and look at a little bit more context of Florida State's defensive back recruiting the last few years. Second segment, I'm going to go ahead and take a look at a few things that if I were coaching Florida State, I would do against Clemson, how I would attack certain things, and vice versa. Just a few additional notes that didn't get into our preview program with Hale McGranahan. So, without further ado, let's go ahead and get into segment one. And I'm joined now by Wayne McGahee III from NoleDigest.com. We're going to talk recruiting, particularly defensive back recruiting. There's been some questions out there about whether or not Florida State could actually land the top two cornerbacks in the country with Levante Taylor, who is very firm to Florida State at this point, kid from Virginia, and Trayvon Mullen, Florida prospect who by all accounts is down to Florida State and LSU. There are a couple other teams potentially involved there, but those are the consensus top two corners in the country, and Florida State is right at the top for both of them. So why don't we start with that, and then we'll progress a little bit to talk about where Florida State is at in terms of defensive back recruiting in the four-year cycle.
Well, Florida State is, Levante Taylor's locked up. He loves Florida State. He's all in. He's recruiting for Florida State. That isn't going to change. Florida State's pretty much got him locked up unless something massive happens and there are massive changes on defense, like the entire defensive staff is fired.
What's interesting is that there was a story on that, by the way, he was all set. Like he had his heart set on going to Virginia. That's what he wanted when he was growing up. He grew up wanting to go to Virginia, was ready to go there, went to the Virginia football offices and all this on an unofficial visit, and nobody met with him. At least that's what I was told.
That doesn't surprise me. That staff's a cluster.
Yeah, so no one ended up coming out and meeting with him or, you know, showing him giving him the five-star treatment like you would expect. And he left and was just devastated. And then Florida State, you know, turned up the love. And that's where it all came from. So, you know, kid wanted to go to Virginia. And this, by the way, people forget how many kids in Virginia actually grow up wanting to go to Virginia. And it's a good thing for Florida State. Now, let's just keep Virginia down and, you know, Virginia Tech down for a little while because FSU is making a killing up there. Anyway.
You know my opinion on Virginia. Virginia could fall off the face of the earth.
Yeah, no doubt.
So moving on to Trayvon. LSU led for a good bit of his recruitment. I mean, a really long time. Everybody thought that he was going to LSU, and then something happened. LSU has dismissed, I think, four or five South Florida players off of their team over the past, like, 14 months, and including one of his best friends who was dismissed about 2 months ago.
And nobody's criticizing him for dismissing him, but it does change the dynamic in terms of recruiting.
They absolutely deserved to be dismissed, and kudos LSU for dismissing them. I mean, it's legitimately, that's something that they should have done.
It's just like the DeAndre Johnson situation at Florida State. You're not going to not keep you can't you don't have a choice. You're going to go ahead and tell that kid we can't keep you. We're going to have to dismiss you, even though it does cost you his brother most likely and potentially a couple other recruits. I mean that hurt Florida State booting him, but you can't not do it.
Absolutely, he had to go, and that's just the way it is. But you know, like the DeAndre Johnson situation, it does take away from some of the kids in South Florida, like Trayvon Mullen, who you know was pretty much all set and wrapped up to go to LSU thanks to Corey Raymond. Somebody needs to go hire that guy, get him out of LSU, because he's a phenomenal recruiter.
Yeah, he's been a thorn in the Florida program's side for a while, because that guy can recruit. Like,
yes, he can. Man. So you've got that. I mean, Florida State's in position to land both. I mean, and we just got an update on Kyle Myers from Chad Simmons, and he says he's firmly committed to Florida State. LSU's maybe trying to make a run at him, which would make things interesting.
Which is scary for any kid in. That's scary for any kid in Louisiana.
Yes, it is. It is always an issue with any kid from Louisiana. But he's taking an official to Ole Miss. He has an LSU offer. He did not decommit from Florida State when he got the LSU offer. So there's reason to hope that he sticks from there.
Yeah, and he's a lot better prospect than I think a lot of people appreciate. I mean, he really played well at the opening, and he's shown quite a bit in terms of top level athleticism, the ability to turn and run. He's got length at about 6'1". You know, he's not the ready made guy that, I mean, Lavonte Taylor, if Florida State could have him on the roster right now, he would be their starting punt returner. Like, he's a ready made
starting star.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he's a guy that could potentially be starting this year.
Florida State could really use him against Artavis Scott this weekend.
Yeah, no question. So, I mean, that's a kid who's coming in ready-made. He's going to be – Lavonte Taylor is an instant impact player in the Florida State defense next year. I mean, regardless of who else is on the roster, Lavonte Taylor is going to play somewhere. Similar to Jalen Ramsey when Ramsey arrived at Florida State – Ramsey was going to play, whether it was at safety, whether it was at star, whether it was at cornerback or whatever. He's a guy you have to make space for because he's going to be one of your best 11 no matter what, day one. I don't know if Taylor's a day one starter, but he might be, and he's going to be a day one contributor. I mean, he'll be the day one starter at punt return. He brings that kind of Greg Reed punt returning ability to Florida State, which is a breath of fresh air after the last couple of years of punt returns or lack thereof at Florida State.
Let's slow the roll on that. I'm a big fan of Nyquan Murray. I know you know that. And he looked pretty good. I mean,
but he didn't look like Lavonte Taylor. I mean, Taylor is he looks like it's a Greg Reed type body where he's got
Taylor's special.
He's a little bit thicker, and then he's got more speed, more top end speed than Reed ever had. So you're looking at a guy who is an elite prospect as a return man. Murray's a good prospect, and I would have liked to have seen him back there a little bit more at punt return so far. I like him a lot, but Lavonte Taylor, I think, is your day one starter at punt returner. He's probably on the field, whether at star. I think you probably still have Trey Marshall at star next year, but you've got Taylor somewhere on the field getting time early next year.
Well, I mean, the issue is that with as well as Marquez White has played, he could make the jump to the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, he's right now. I would be surprised if once scouts actually looked at his tape from this year, I'd be surprised if he was anywhere outside of the first two rounds even this year if he left, which is kind of scary because, you know, you get a first two round possibility if you're in his shoes. You think about going, and Florida State certainly doesn't want him to go anywhere. Now, if he stays. The way he's played, I've been totally surprised by how good he has looked. The way he's played like a first-round corner. Not a second-round corner, a first-round corner. Now, teams are going to want more film on him, but he's going to test.
Have a chance this weekend.
And he's going to test awfully well. So, you know, you give him, if he stayed another year, I would expect him to be one of the three or four top-rated corners, probably the top two corners, along with maybe one of the guys from Florida coming out the next year. So, but if he does, if he goes, you're right. Then all corner positions are wide open.
Yep.
So let's go ahead and actually, Mullen is another guy. Mullen actually reminds me a little bit of Kevin Tolliver, who also is at LSU, a long guy, really, really smooth. Tolliver is a little bit thicker coming out, but that kind of player who, again, because of those physical tools, he's a guy that could play right away. But at the same point, go ahead.
I don't think that he's a guy that can come in and play immediately. I've seen him in person. And while he is very good, very technically sound, he's a great ball player. He is rail thin. If that kid's ever had three square meals a day in his life, I would be surprised.
Yeah, he's about 6'1", 170. So it's yes, kind of similar to Marquez White, actually, for a while. And White has beefed up a little bit. He's about 180, 185 now. And that's made a huge difference in his game.
He needs to get into the Florida State strength and conditioning program. I'm not ruling him out from playing as a freshman, but I don't think he's a come in day one can start kind of guy.
No, but he is one of those guys with a first round kind of ceiling at that position. And of course, it's a good thing because Florida State didn't get any quality defensive backs last cycle. So that So even with guys like Taylor, who is probably an instant impact guy, he's going to have to beat out some quality corners. So last cycle, take us through a little bit of what Florida State got last cycle, because we're starting to see him now.
Yeah, well, you've got five-star Derwin James at safety. I mean,
he's pretty good.
Pro Football Focus rated him as the number one, you know, true freshman in the country. I don't know if that's pretty good. I think it's pretty good.
That's number one regardless of position.
Yeah, regardless of position. He's rated as the number three safety overall in college football. That's how good he's been. So, you've got him, and then you've got five-star Tavarus McFadden, who finally got some real playing time last week, played very well.
And he really impressed me with how he played. He actually looked better than I expected him to look in that cleanup time against Syracuse. I mean, Syracuse doesn't have any receivers that really scare you, but it's the technique and the assignment.
Don't go knocking my boy,
Steve Ishmael. Well, listen, Ishmael's a good player, and he had a great catch against Ramsey. But when you know what you're looking for is assignment and technique soundness, and I saw that from McFadden. And I saw the concern with McFadden coming out is you're looking at a guy that's 6'2 plus.
Yeah.
And you know, can he turn and run? Is he sudden enough to really play that position the way that you want him to at corner? Or is he going to grow into a safety? With what we saw this week, he looked like a corner.
Oh, he is 100% a corner. I don't think. I don't think that's any question. He has great hips. He turns and runs very well. He tracks the ball very well. I'm a big fan of him. After him, you have Marcus Lewis, who's been really, you know, just shot in the foot with injuries.
Yeah, he's been. He would have been on the field. I think he would have been probably the starting star at this point if he had been on the field.
He had a knee injury. Which kept him out for about a month and a half, and then right now he's dealing with a concussion. But if he wasn't dealing with a concussion, he probably would have, you know, played this weekend at the star. I mean, you have Javian Elliott there right now, who a former walk-on, and he played well. But Artavis Scott is just a completely different animal.
Well, and it's not just Scott; they've got a couple different slots there that really scare you. And you know, Scott is. Artavis Scott is one of the best receivers in the country, let alone slot receivers, and you know can scare you over the top. But they've also got the other kid. What's his name?
Ray.
No, Ray McLeod is another one. But then they've got the other one, the white kid.
Oh, is it Renfro?
Yeah, Renfro. Renfro is another kid that is a really really good player and fast, and gives you some problems because of how quickly he gets in and out of breaks. So I mean they. Yeah, their slots are going to get, you know, are a problem. And again, Lewis is a guy that could have stepped right in and potentially done that. And I think Lewis is a guy coming in. It wasn't clear whether he'd wind up at corner, whether he'd wind up at safety, whether he'd wind up at star. They're bringing in a lot of these kinds of hybrid guys. And Lewis is a good example of that. Given how McFadden has looked, I think it's more likely that Lewis winds up playing a little bit more star and winds up sort of being the coverage star along with, you know, Trey Marshall next year. So Marshall probably plays star next year, and then you've got Lewis probably behind him as the kind of coverage star. So he plays more against a team like Clemson, for example.
Well, the interesting thing is that Florida State has to replace Marcus Brutus, who has been very very good this season.
And Lewis could do that.
Yeah, so Lewis could be the guy there. I like him a lot better than the other options. So I think you have him and Derwin back there in the secondary.
And then Westbrook got some time this week.
Yeah, I like Westbrook coming in. I wasn't a huge fan of his.
I think he actually compares kind of to Brutus as a prospect in that regard. I mean,
he needs some time.
Yeah, he's going to take a little while. But, you know, there are a few others. Calvin Bruton is a guy who, again, I think he's more of a depth guy at this phase. But then we look forward to 2017.
Don't even start talking about 2017. That's,
That may shape up to be the best defensive back class, not just in the country, but the best class Florida State's had at that position in a while, at those sets of positions.
Maybe ever. I don't want to go ahead and, you know, make that statement, but it's
early.
It's a possibility. I mean, you've got Stanford Samuels III.
Legacy.
Yeah. Number 16 player in the country, probably should be a little bit higher. Then you've got, you know, Cyrus Fagan, safety, 30th ranked player in the country.
And he should be rated higher.
I like Fagan. Then you have Daniel Wright, who's ranked 42nd, and he definitely should be rated higher. Florida State leads with him despite Major Wright being his brother. You know, Major Wright, who went to Florida.
Yeah.
Then you've got Deion Jones, a corner from Archbishop Carroll in D.C. He's ranked 70, the 72nd prospect in the country. Came down to Florida State, loved his visit. Florida State was a big fan of his. Then you've got Jamias Williams, rated as the number 91. And this is probably my favorite kid in the entire class.
Yeah, and he's another one of those guys. He probably projects as a field corner, and he's definitely a take.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely love the kid. He plays... He plays like Greg Reed with the attitude of, you know, Jalen, and he's just I love the kid. He's got that dog mentality.
Yeah, he's I mean, he's a shorter kid. He's about 5'9", 5'10", which makes him a rare take for Florida State. But if they're taking a kid that's under 6 foot, you know he's special.
Oh yeah, and that kid is special on both sides of the ball.
Yeah,
he's had multiple games this season where he's ran for over 350 yards.
And then you have my favorite prospect from this group, Malik Gray, the kid from Tennessee, who, you know, grew up. You know, he kind of came up in high school watching Jalen Ramsey. Yeah. He's not interested in playing. You know, he's not an SEC kid. He's not interested in Tennessee, the local school. It was between Florida State and, or it still is really between Florida State and Southern Cal, but Southern Cal is kind of a mess, and Florida State continues to lead for him. And I think that kid may be a top five, top 10 player, regardless of position going into next year.
Scout has him rated absurdly low. I've actually talked to a number of people trying to get him rated higher because I watched him and compared him to the number one rated safety from Texas, Jeffrey Okuda.
It was much better.
It wasn't even close. Okuda is just not anywhere near on the same level as Gray is. He's ranked absurdly low at 151. He's a top 10 player in the country.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, like you said, a top 10 potentially, regardless of position, player in the country, a guy that is similar to a Jalen Ramsey in the sense that. He doesn't need to have a position. He's going to be on the field day one, because he's going to be on the field, whether it's at safety, whether it's at star, whether it's at cornerback. He's going to be on the field at some point. He could play safety, could play star, could play corner. When you get those guys who can do all of them very well, you want those guys on your roster. So before we wrap up, obviously Florida State it looks like the defensive back recruiting is well in hand for the next couple of years. Any other updates that we should be looking at for the 2016 class? Since there's been a lot of changes since we last talked on this show, at least.
Yeah, one of the big changes is 5-star defensive end Oluwole Betuku. And I think I pronounced that right.
Betiku.
Yeah. So he's taking an official to Florida State. He's taking an official to Texas A&M. He's taking an unofficial visit to Texas A&M this weekend. Florida State is going to need to get him back on campus, preferably with his mentor, LeVar Arrington.
Arrington almost went to Florida State. He's always loved Florida State, so it wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, they have to get him back on campus with Arrington in an unofficial capacity to have a chance, because he's going to Texas A&M on his own dime. He loved both visits, but if he doesn't make that trip. He is coming to see Florida State play one more time. Unfortunately, he's going to watch Florida State play Florida in the Swamp. So
well, that could be a good or a bad thing, but he needs to get back to Tallahassee without a doubt. I think at this point you've got to favor the fact that Texas A&M is getting that immediate return visit as putting them sort of in the driver's seat at this point. Obviously, he was a UCLA commit, so they're still on the board as well. But given that he's going on his own dime to Texas A&M again, that probably suggests that they're more likely than Florida State to get him. But FSU's got to fight very hard for him. And he's a kid that, again, he's a day one contributor. And he's a kid that, under a guy like Brad Lawing, is probably a high first-round draft pick.
Probably. I would agree with that. Then moving on to the Miami debacle and, you know, losing Golden and, you know, having the worst loss in Miami history to Clemson a couple weeks ago.
What was the score of that game again?
58-0.
So Miami lost what? 58-0?
58-0.
Wow. That must have been unpleasant for that program.
Well, yeah. I mean, especially since they have more talent.
Yeah. Well, anyway. Yeah. Well, okay. So... recruiting fallout there.
Yeah, there's really only one player that Florida State's making a run at, and that's linebacker Zach McLeod.
Really good prospect.
Yep, Florida State's making a run at him. You know, Miami's coaching staff's up in the air. So,
and he's an early enrollee, so he's got less time to decide. This is what actually puts him in play. Is if Miami was able to just hire a quality coach now, this is a kid that probably does go to Miami. But with him being an early enrollee, the stability at Florida State looks a lot more attractive. And rumblings are Florida State probably gets this kid.
Yeah, I mean, Florida State was after him before he, you know, before he decommitted from Miami, before that coaching staff was fired. So... I mean, there were rumblings that he was going to end up at Florida State before then, and this has just, you know, gone on and amplified those.
Yeah, and Florida State can use all the help they can get at the linebacker position, especially with the kid that's going to be an early enrollee, has some length and some ability to contribute a little bit earlier because he's a little bit more developed in that regard. Well, Wayne, thank you for joining us. Again, my guest has been Wayne McGahee III, publisher at NoleDigest.com, my co-collaborator over there at Nole Digest. Go ahead and make sure to check in with us and our content, both on recruiting and in our coverage of Florida State athletics in general at NoleDigest.com. You can follow Wayne at Wayne McGahee III. That's at Wayne McGahee III on Twitter. And now we'll go ahead and move into our second segment after a quick break. Once again, this is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Just a few additional things before we wrap this show. In our preview podcast with Hale McGranahan from the Clemson Insider, if you haven't heard it, Hale has lots to share about Clemson coming into this game. Talked a little bit about three key factors coming into this game. Basically looking at the matchups between Clemson's slot receivers and Florida State's defensive backs on the interior, the star and safety positions, along with tight end, the Clemson tight end against the Florida State linebackers. That matchup in that middle of the field area in the back seven for Florida State being one key matchup. Another key matchup being Dalvin Cook in the passing game against Clemson's linebackers who've had some trouble in pass coverage over the course of the season, and looking at whether or not they're able to have a little bit more success against the best back that they've faced all season. And then the third factor being the question of if Florida State can keep this game close going into the fourth quarter, can Florida State actually wear down a Clemson team that isn't quite as deep as this young and banged up, but still very talented and deep Florida State team. So those we looked at as sort of the three factors coming into this game, and again, you can go ahead and listen to that. That's the prior podcast to this, when we spent a lot more time fleshing those things out. But a couple things that came up on this that have come up over the last day or so in social media and on message boards and so on. It's this question of, you know, should Florida State move Jalen Ramsey into the star position, for example, to cover Artavis Scott and some of these other guys who are problematic matchups in the slot. And I actually don't think that's a good idea for a couple reasons. One is Ramsey has a tremendous impact on the game from that boundary corner spot, because he essentially can take away that one receiver on that side and do some things that force teams basically to go to the other side of the field. And that's also in the run game. As a run support player on that short side, he takes away a lot as a run support player on the short side, that it's harder for him to have that kind of impact from the star against a team like Clemson that's going to bubble screen a bunch, that's going to use those small, shifty receivers in the slot to try to get mismatches against a longer, taller guy who's a little bit easier to turn around, like Jalen Ramsey. So what you don't want to do is try to, I think the thing you're going to try to do is avoid giving up any sort of one-on-one matchups against the slot receiver. You don't want to get into a bunch of one-on-one stuff if you can help it at all. So I think the key here, if I'm Florida State, if I'm defensive coordinator Charles Kelly, to me the key is to use the outside cornerbacks as best I can. So if I've got corners the quality of Jalen Ramsey and Marquez White, I'm deciding based on the weaknesses that I've seen over the course of the season that I'm just going to put those guys on an island. If Sherrone Peak can beat Jalen Ramsey on the short side, and they're able to get big plays out of that, then you tip your cap. Your guy beat our best guy. But I've long been of the opinion that on defense, generally speaking, philosophically, what you want to do is you want to take away what they do best, first and foremost. So you want them, you know, there's an old thing, the old saying is you want them to beat you left-handed. So if they're a running team, you want to make them have to throw to beat you. If they're a passing team, you want to try to make them run. Bottom line is you want to make a team one-dimensional, and preferably with the dimension that they don't do as well. If you can't do that, then at least you try to make them one-dimensional in other regards. So they're going to have to be patient and go to things that they're not necessarily as comfortable with as some of their base stuff. So if they're a zone running team, you want them to have to go to power and to counter and things like that to actually beat you. You want to be able to fit up what they're doing on their base stuff to take that away. The other thing, though, and this is where I really think this comes in this game, is I want the offense to have to beat my defense at what my defense does best as well. So that's the flip side to that. You want the offense to have to do what they don't do as well. And if it lines up, that's great. But it doesn't always. Either way, you want the offense to have to beat what your defense does best. So if you've got a pair of great corners on the outside who can man up and play man-to-man coverage, get in guys' faces and not give up big plays and potentially actually create turnovers, then to me, what you want to do is try to force teams or bait teams into daring them to beat you at those spots. So to me, the thing you've got to do is man up Jalen Ramsey, man up Marquez White on those outside wide receivers and say, we're not really going to put safeties over top to help them. We're not going to give as much help there. Jalen, Marquez, especially Jalen, you're on your own. And we want them to challenge you. We want them to come after you all game, because if they do that, we think that our guy is better than the guy he's going to be across from. That's how I'm going to take this. And what that allows me to do coverage-wise is to take those slot positions or that tight end position and give that a little bit more safety help. So if Florida State has its, you know, can what Florida State really wants to be able to do here is to stop the run with the defensive tackles, and it looks like as of this recording that Nile Lawrence-Stample will play, which that's huge for Florida State. He's their best defensive tackle. So now you've got an edge on the interior. If you can stop, if you can limit their run game with your front six and not have to commit an extra safety, then what you do is you go with an extra safety over the top, and you can play a little tighter on that slot and make sure that safety is just keeping an eye on those slot players. You never give up. You bracket the slots. You match coverages as much as you can to avoid getting rubs and switches and all that sort of thing, so that guys don't get rubbed off of each other. And then you just keep a safety over top so that nothing is actually too, even if you give up a play there, even if even if they complete a pass, you force them to have to be patient and do it over and over and over again down the field. So essentially what you're trying to do is go one-on-one on each outside corner, and then go two-on-one or three-on-one, or at least, three-on-two on the inside. So you've got safety help and underneath coverage both on the inside, and by doing that, you've got some additional stuff that because you're getting that advantage on the outside, you're able to get to commit some additional resources to that to the inside where you've got some mismatches. The other thing that I think Florida State may do is on some downs, don't be surprised if Derwin James winds up in a robber role a lot in this game. What I mean by that is that he actually winds up being an underneath coverage player he's going to combine as a sort of floating underneath coverage player in a man-free type environment. So you go one safety over top. That would be LaMarcus Brutus. And then you have Derwin James in that robber role, where his role would just be to read the eyes of the quarterback. And then if the quarterback runs, he spies him. If he throws, he's going to try to follow the eyes and rob that stuff in the middle of the field. I would play a ton of that type of coverage with a guy like Derwin James on the interior, because again, that's where they're likely to have their advantages, is on the interior. Use the athleticism and the speed and the instincts of a guy like Derwin James, and let him float a little bit in the middle of the field there to be a problem for Watson. And then if Watson scrambles, James has the spy there, so that if he gets upfield at all, as soon as he crosses the line of scrimmage, James has him. I'd do some of that as well. So to me, you man up on the outside, you make sure you have safety help over the top on the inside of the field, and you make sure that the safety doesn't focus too much on helping outside. And then maybe you give a Derwin James or somebody like that a spy role, a robber role more than a spy role on the inside of the field. And then on the offensive side, I mean, there's not a whole lot to say really, other than they need to be able to run the football with both Dalvin Cook and Jaquez Patrick. And they need to be able to get Dalvin Cook in one-on-one situations against those linebackers. And we've talked about that quite a bit so far. Beyond that, I mean, there's really not much to say. The offense just needs to be able to block and be able to protect the quarterback and run the football well enough to have some success, and they've got to be able to deliver in the red zone. Simple as that. And I think, if Florida State takes that approach on each side of the football, they've got the best opportunity to win this game that they're going to give themselves. I mean, I still don't think Florida State wins this game, most likely. But they've got a puncher's chance. 20% chance or so, which is what I'm pegging this game as, is not zero. They've got a puncher's chance, and particularly if they can take this game a little bit deeper, you've got to make sure that Clemson doesn't get big plays. And Wayne McGahee, who we had on the first segment, he's got a piece over at Noel Digest today that talks about how Clemson has depended on the big play all season on the offensive side, just like Florida State has. And if the Florida State defense doesn't give up a bunch of those big plays, if they're able to stop the run, limit the run a little bit, and then defend those slot receivers well enough, then this game goes into the fourth quarter, and Florida State's got quite a good chance because of the the playmaker that they have in the backfield in Dalvin Cook. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if Florida State won this game. I don't think that they should be favored by any means. You know, I think that the Vegas line accurately reflects the difference between the teams to this point in the season. But all told, if Florida State is able to man up on the outside and take some of that stuff away and is able to handle a little bit up front on the offensive side, this is a ball game. All right, that's going to do it for us. And before we get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can follow our earlier guest, Wayne McGahee, at Wayne McGahee III. That's at Wayne McGahee III. And, of course, Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio. And drop by our stuff for our preview, our additional preview details at NoleDigest.com. And, of course, make sure to catch our next podcast in which we will cover the fallout from the Clemson game, win or lose. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a Bsporto channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.